Sea Realm Vault Podcast, episode number 443, Tuesday, January 24th, 2023. Hello, Sea Realm Vault subscribers, KMO here. I am in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I am house-sitting and cat-sitting for a friend who's gone away for medical reasons. Not gone away as in gone away from this plane of existence, just gone away from Santa Fe, New Mexico, temporarily. I should be here for about the next 3 weeks to a month, in which time I hope to make some connections that will result in interviews, recorded interviews, conversations that you will hear either here on the Vault or on the main CROM podcast or possibly on YouTube or scattered over all three. Speaking of YouTube, I've been talking a lot about the reaction of people who purport to be working artists, most of whom I believe are young people who have an aspiration of eventually making a living as an artist. And they think that artificial intelligence and AI-generated imagery, which results from text prompts input by sometimes by artists, sometimes by people who haven't learned to draw, is threatening their livelihoods. And they're kind of right, but I think for the most part, I would guess that 99 out of 100 people who, you know, fantasize about being artists and who take the time to learn to draw never actually earn much of their income with art. And AI might make it 999,999 out of a million rather than 99 out of 100. You know, artists who are or would be aspirational artists who don't actually make a living with art. But I think for the most part, people who object to the use of this technology are not working artists. And I think that most savvy working artists are just going to make use of this technology or fall behind. Now, if you're currently making a living creating oil paintings, and you eschew such things as digital photography, Photoshop, Illustrator, or any sort of digital tool whatsoever, you probably have a pretty loyal clientele or, you know, or some well-established means of selling your art, and, you know, AI image generation is not going to change that. But if you want to make this your career, and, you know, your position on AI art is, I hate it, I won't use it, I want it to go away, well, you know, say that about the internet. I hate it. I don't like it. I want it to go away. What's that do for you? It's not going away. I have heard from many people who claim to be working artists. Again, I don't believe that most of them are. But, you know, they tell me that if the lawsuit against Stable Diffusion goes through, then AI art is defeated and, you know, human artists will emerge victorious. Not realistic, folks. So those are my cards on the table up front. I see this as technology which is here to stay and which will continue to evolve quite rapidly. And in 2022, it moved from, hey, that's novel, that's pretty cool, to holy shit. And that's in just 1 year. So, you know, maybe it's going to stagnate tomorrow. Maybe we have hit the wall, but I wouldn't put any money on it. Anyway, here is the third in my series of conversations with John Atwood, somebody who is a career technologist and who is pretty well-versed in this stuff. We recorded this conversation at the Circus Circus Hotel in Reno, Nevada, the day before I flew out for Santa Fe. I made the mistake of placing the microphone down on a glass tabletop, which created some unfortunate reverb. Sorry about that. I hope to improve the quality of the coming podcasts, even though I will be away from most of my equipment for about another month. But there are possibilities for borrowing equipment here in Santa Fe. I'll say no more about that because the meeting that might lead to such things is still in the future, and I don't want to jinx it. So here is my most recent conversation with John Atwood. All right. Well, I would say back with John Atwood, but we're in a place that neither one of us has ever been before. At least I assume you've never been in this particular room in the Circus Circus.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. But it is much more roomier than the car.
Well, on behalf of the listeners, I thank you because if I weren't talking to you, there would be fewer episodes of the podcast in the archive.
Yeah.
You want to maybe describe the juxtaposition between where you picked me up and where we are now?
Well, let's see. I you picked up KMO. It is what did you call it? Your
I call it a bunkhouse.
The bunkhouse up in Kings Beach. Mm-hmm. It's Well, you've done videos on the bunkhouse, so it doesn't need a lot more explanation.
Yes, it is small. It is cramped. It is dingy, and it was not really designed for its current purpose. So the kitchen is very weird. It's like a galley kitchen, like
right.
Some kitchen on a boat or something. It's so small.
Right, and then plus you have people who are there a lot.
Yes, and there's four of us in a room smaller than this hotel room.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, you picked them up, and we drove down. We were going to have lunch, and we could have gone straight to Reno, but I'm much more familiar with Carson City because that's a little closer to where I live. Mm-hmm. And so we drove up to US 50 on Spooner Summit, which is basically, if you take a right, you'll end up in South Lake Tahoe. Take a left, you'll end up in Carson City. You go down the hill. And we had a nice Thai lunch at a very good Thai restaurant, and then mm-hmm. shipped off KMO's baggage, essentially, and came up to Reno, and we checked into the circus here, and we're on the 19th floor, got a nice view to the north.
Yeah, looking out of the university.
Yeah, University of Nevada is right across the freeway from here.
And it is Nevada, not Nevada.
Right, it's Nevada. I got corrected multiple times when I first moved up here, because especially coming from the east, where I would say aunt instead of aunt.
Right.
That the Nevada was quickly, rectified.
And you're from Connecticut.
Yes. Reading, Connecticut. Grew up there and then went to college in New York. And then in 1977 moved out to California to work at Intel as a design engineer. And then spent, 40 some odd years in Santa Clara and San Jose and working at various high-tech companies. By the mid-90s, I decided to just get out of the rat race, do consulting on my own, and did both what I call high-tech consulting, which was related to the high-tech stuff I was working on, like I worked at Rambus and places like that. And then low-tech, which is the vacuum tube stuff, which I like to design and build vacuum tube amplifiers, and I did some consulting work for companies that do that kind of thing. And that was enjoyable. But then in 1998, a friend of mine, from the audio scene, called me up and said, his dad died and he's having a hard time selling the house in Yerington, Nevada. And I'd heard about it. And so I drove up and checked it out. And it's a nice big house. And it was fairly inexpensive. It's on 15 acres in the middle of nowhere. And I bought it and moved up. And I kept my house in San Jose till 2005, which is one reason I am economically stable right now, because I got a lot of money for selling the house at that time. So
yeah.
And so I've been in Yerington ever since. It's about a 2-hour drive from Kings Beach. Mm-hmm. And since I go up to Carson City almost once a week, just the extra half an hour to Kings Beach didn't really make it that hard.
But then an extra half hour back down to Carson City, and then another 20 minutes up to Reno, it adds up.
Yeah, but I have to say, I live by myself. I really look for chances to get out of the house. And I get stir crazy sometimes, especially with COVID and the whole deal there. So, it's good. And I really enjoy talking with you because we have some pretty substantial interests that we can share.
Yes, overlaps in interests and experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been socially isolated for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Starving for human contact, really. Mm-hmm. And now I've just spent 2.5 months, 3 months crammed into a little box with two other guys.
Yeah, but you're not going to have any kind of meaningful conversations, I would guess.
Not many, no. lots of, tuning out the other people and creating the illusion of personal space or the mm-hmm. the feeling, anyway, of being kind of isolated when you're not.
right. So,
like riding the subway.
Yeah. No, it's neat what you did. I mean, the whole snowmaking thing was pretty cool, but it's if you're going to do this again, get a better living situation.
definitely. But, the better situation I get in terms of living, the less money I'll walk away from or walk away with.
Right. And, for example, if you live down here in Reno, you're going to have a car. In fact, you have to have a car that's probably winter capable.
Got to have a four-wheel drive.
Yeah. Subarus are good. Yeah. I've had Subarus, and they are really good in the snow.
And I'll remind the listeners that you drive a Lexus.
It's a hybrid Lexus.
I was really hoping that I was planning to be here, you know, for months longer than I will end up being and making more money. And I was hoping to buy a used Lexus.
Yeah, they're great cars, and the hybrid. It's first of all, it's a big car, and it's very powerful. I get about 42 miles per gallon, which, you know, for a big car like that, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
And I've had it, by the way, for, let's see, almost 10 years now.
And, you know.
And it works just as good as when it's brand new.
This is not what we were going to talk about, but we seem to be, like, entering into the third decade of, like, cultural and design stagnation.
Yes.
Where, you know, the styles of clothing, cars, music, furniture, I mean, all kinds of, they're very distinctly recognizable. Mm-hmm. You know, the 40s look different from the 50s. The 50s certainly look way different from the 60s, mm-hmm. 60s, 70s, 80s. All of these have very distinctive motifs and visual styles. And then you get into the 90s and things kind of slow down and settle. And then we've kind of been in the same design aesthetic
for decades now.
Yeah. Like, since totally the late 90s. It's very strange.
Right, right. I was reading somewhere where some guy said, just imagine that you had a time machine where you could take somebody and put them ahead 20 years. Mm-hmm. So if you took somebody from 1920 and then had them jump to 1940, they'd have a hard time recognizing. I think a lot of things changed. Yeah. You went from 1930 to 1950, huge change.
Yeah.
50 to 70, huge change. But as you start getting up to the present, you there's little things like, oh, yeah, it was fancy cell phones and things like that. But other than that, it almost hasn't changed.
It's funny when you watch movies that are fairly new and everything looks contemporary until the character pulls out their phone.
Right, and it's an old flip phone or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, in our previous conversations, we talked about the history of communications technology and then how it's been put to use in shaping mass consciousness. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time talking about radio, some time about, you know, TV and then cable TV. And then we did a whole episode on, you know, internet and social media. You've been watching my YouTube videos. You know, I've been talking a lot and thinking a lot about AI generated imagery.
Right.
Hashtag AI art is a very simple, short little phrase that you can use to reference it. But a lot of people are very offended by the idea that these images are art.
Right, right. In fact, there was a case, maybe I should step back and explain how I got into it. Because it was, my interest in it was actually well before you started talking about AI. So it's not coincidental that we...
Probably not before I started talking about AI, but maybe before I started talking about, you know, AI-generated imagery.
Imagery, right, right. Well, I you know, I have a bunch of computers at home. I have both PCs and Macs. And my main computer for browsing the web was a Mac Mini. And I was getting a little bit old, and I thought, you know, I was thinking, oh, maybe you should upgrade. And so I ended up in October buying a Mac Studio computer, which basically it's sort of the same form factor as a Mac Mini, except it's taller. Mm-hmm. And it has an M1 Max processor. And I got it fairly loaded. It was 32 gigabytes of RAM and 512 gig SSD storage. And it's a nice, it's nice, it works great, it's super fast. But the reason I got it is I had heard about Stable Diffusion and the you know, text-to-image stuff being open source. And they said, oh, there's a version that can run on the M1 or M2 Macs. And so that influenced me to upgrade to that Mac. And I got it, and then I downloaded the software. Maybe I should spend a little time talking about the Stable Diffusion board.
Sure.
Stable Diffusion was done by a company... I think it's called Stability AI. Mm-hmm. But what they did, there already existed some text-to-image AIs before, like DALL-E and Midjourney. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you might know some other ones.
I use various platforms online, like Night Cafe is the one that I find most agreeable in terms of the interface. Mm-hmm. And with that one, you have your choice of which model you want to use. So
Right. They've
got a couple different versions of Stable Diffusion. They've got DALL-E, and then they've got some older, like just style transfer sort of things where you provide an image, a starting image, and then you pick a style.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
There's also Wombo Dream, which I was using like about a year ago, and I look back at the things that I was creating with it a year ago, and they just seem really quaint.
That's a polite way of putting it.
Yeah. The technology, you know, the software, and the training of the algorithms, it just advanced enormously in the year 2022. Mm-hmm. It's like not in the early 20s.
Sorry.
It's like in 2022, things got markedly better.
Yes. Yeah.
Like markedly better.
Well, the thing that got me interested in this Stable Diffusion one is it's completely open source.
Yeah.
And you run it on your own computer. You don't have to go up to the cloud. You don't have to go to a server. You know, you own all the images. No, but, you know, most of these other ones, you don't own the images.
Right.
Which, if you're actually going to use them for anything important, is kind of a killer.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not very much a do-it-yourselfer. You know, like I have my own network attached storage system set up at home. I avoid the cloud whenever I can because, they're going to go away eventually. I like to keep control of my own stuff. So anyway, now, but the trouble is that a Stable Diffusion is really a very low-level thing. It's sort of like a command line-based thing. And so what people have done is they've written various GUI interfaces to go on top of it. There's a bunch of different ones for the PC. There's a couple for the Mac. The one that I'm using for the Mac, it's a fairly simple one. It's called Diffusion B. D-E-E, just attached to Diffusion. And it's probably low on the feature set as far as how many parameters you can change. But it does come with the standard 1.5.1 model that everyone's been using. And it runs really, really good on my Mac Studio. You know, the default is a 512 by 512 image. And it'll generate a 512 by 512 image in about 17 seconds. And I have a couple of big monitors, and I typically will set it up so that, you know, you can actually have it run multiple times, but each time it picks a different random seed, so it sort of starts from a different place in the data set. And so I often will do either 4 or 8 images at a time. And it's amazing. It's important that you do that because they can be really different from each other, even if you have a pretty specific prompt. Mm-hmm. And so what people end up doing is they often will do these many images and then throw out the weird ones or the crap ones. And then, you know, but if they see one that's good, you can get the seed number and then use that. And then once you start with the seed, it'll always reproduce the same way. And I have some notes that I made before we came down here.
You don't have to admit that. There's no camera.
I know. No, I'm just saying that's why you're paper rustling. That's what it is. And there's a big controversy going on right now. Basically, the artists versus the AIs. And the artists are saying, this is terrible. You know, you don't do hardly any work and you get this incredible image. You're putting us out of business. Okay. That's just the artist whining that there's a new tool
that they either need to incorporate into their workflow,
right,
or suffer the consequences of failing to do so.
Right, right. Now, but the other complaint, which has, I think, a degree of validity, but it unfortunately, that most people will understand how Stable Diffusion works, is that the data set for Stable Diffusion was created by a company called LAION, which is a German company, and it basically got how many images? It's like billions of images scraped from the web.
Yeah.
And what they do is they associate text words with it. So that's the key thing, is you have some words and then you have the image and that's the thing that connects the text to the image.
Right. The statistical correlations that the AI is making is between text prompts and descriptions.
Yes.
Text descriptions of images.
Right. And so this is from the Wikipedia page for LAION.
So is that a German acronym?
I think it is. It's a German company.
Okay.
The first such data set, LAION-400M, was released in August 2021 and consisted of 400 million image caption pairs. The pairs were extracted from a random subset of web pages scraped up by Common Crawl between 2014 and 2021. The company had chosen to open source the model's code and weights, but not its training data set. Successor of more than 5 billion pairs, LAION-5B, was released in March 2022. As of the release, it was the largest freely available data set of image caption pairs in existence. Its creation was funded by Doodlebot, Hugging Face, and Stability AI, the AI company behind the funding of Stable Diffusion text-to-image model, which it was trained on. So that's the one that I've been playing with, is the one with the 5 billion pairs. Now, we should talk about Common Crawl, because that's where they got these images from. Mm-hmm. And again, this is straight from the Wikipedia page. Common Crawl is a nonprofit 501c3 organization that crawls the web and frequently provides its archives and data sets to the public. Common Crawl's web archive consists of petabytes of data collected since 2011. It completely crawls generally every month. The organization crawlers respect nofollow and robots.txt policies. Those are things.
Say that again.
The organization's crawlers respect nofollow and robots.txt. Now, I know when I've done my own websites, if you put a robots.txt in like a particular folder or directory, web crawlers are supposed to see that and then not scrape that. Hmm. They don't always do behave that way, but that's generally the rule.
Is that an HTML tag or what is that?
No, it's actually, I can't remember the exact format. It's actually a file that you put in in the directory that you don't want to have scraped.
Okay. What's the file called again?
Robots.txt.
Robots?
Yeah.
Like a plural robot?
Yep.
Okay.
Open source code for processing Common Crawl's data set is publicly available. The Common Crawl data set includes copyrighted work and is distributed from the U.S. under fair use claims. Researchers in other countries have made use of the techniques such as shuffling sentences or referencing the Common Crawl data set to work around copyright law in other legal jurisdictions. So just keep in mind, the Common Crawl thing was okayed under fair use. And fair use is basically where you can use something out of copyright, but you're not cheating the original copyright owner. It's typically used like in reviews or a little snippet that you want to say, hey, this is something, what this is like.
Or analysis.
Or analysis, right. Or for education.
Right.
Things like that. So Stable Diffusion came out and it's gone through a couple of different versions now. And we got back to the people complaining about, the use of AI.
Now, let me pause for just a second and then point out that what's the name of the company? Lyon, that created the data set.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stability AI, they released Stable Diffusion as an open source project, that anybody can put on their computer and run and modify, train it up. There are lots of other models that use data sets with copyrighted imagery.
Right.
But Stable Diffusion, because they're open source, because it's a community project, they disclosed the data, the training set data.
Yes, yes.
They didn't have to do that.
Right.
There are many companies, for-profit companies, that are using, data sets that are full of copyrighted works, and they haven't disclosed the training data set that they use.
Right.
So all of this anger and what, to my mind, just looks like panicked thrashing by artists and would-be artists, and I think it's probably more would-be artists who are complaining. They are directing their ire at the one player who's like open and honest and giving, and all of these other private players who are in it for the money and who are not playing by any sort of rules are just hiding their activities, and they seem to have escaped the notice of the artists. But I'll just opine briefly, and then we'll move on. The artists, their cause is hopeless.
Right.
There is no putting this genie back in the bottle.
Well, the thing is, we're not out of the woods on this, because first of all, if people do lawsuits, the law is weird sometimes.
Oh yeah.
There's been plenty of trials, especially when it involves technology, where if it goes to a jury trial, they go to the completely wrong result because
they don't understand the tech.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's happened multiple times.
It's very much the case with text-to-image AI generation.
Right.
Because, I've interviewed multiple people about how this technology works, and I can't really explain to you how it works.
It's complicated. I don't even have an intuitive grasp of how it puts the images together. Mm-hmm. Before we started this, I was showing KMO some of the images I've created just on my own computer. And it's the diversity and detail is incredible.
Yeah.
Actually, I've been doing a lot of experiments with sort of underspecifying the prompt as your input to it.
Right.
And now if you go to some of the groups that, Stable Diffusion groups like in Reddit or there's other news groups, you get these people who have prompts that are like a mile long. They're trying to tweak every little thing, and, you know. But in my case, I was sort of saying, can I make abstract art with this? And so I'll put in a prompt. I can put in a prompt. It wouldn't take a blank as a prompt, but it would take a period. Mm-hmm. Or take an exclamation point as a prompt. The whole damn prompt. And it came up with some pretty interesting stuff. And a lot of it's very articulated, and the composition is good. Like, you'll have, it might have something weird, but it has a nice background, has a nice foreground, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on here. And actually, I think I found there was a posting on the Reddit Stable Diffusion group just a day or two ago. This is in regard to the whole thing about the user copyrighted data and all that stuff. And he talks about the fact that people believe that Stable Diffusion is just some kind of image compression algorithm. And so when you give a prompt, it just sort of goes through and finds images and you know, composes them, but they might be from copyrighted sources, okay? You know, the source really was, you know, fair use, open mm-hmm. source. Let's see. Well, I'll read a couple of paragraphs, if you don't mind, because he actually explains it about the best I've seen. And the author is Concheria, Conchería, and this is at the Reddit Stable Diffusion group. And so he was talking about how people have the wrong idea about, you know, the whole copyright thing. They think that because there's any copyrighted image in the original data set, that anything that Stable Diffusion creates is a copyright violation, which I think is going way beyond where copyright law is. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Okay. They even give an example of, in the lawsuit filing. By the way, this is a lawsuit that was filed last week by three artists against Stability AI. What was the other one? A couple other ones who have these open source stuff. They even give as an example in the lawsuit filing, the program struggles with returning a prompt such as a dog wearing a baseball cap while eating ice cream, because there aren't good representations of these concepts from which it can interpolate. This, of course, is poppycock. You can totally get a picture of a dog wearing a baseball cap while eating ice cream, because this isn't how diffusion models work at all. The notion that every image from the training data exists at some specific spot in the latent space is complete nonsense. The latent space, by the way, is the n-dimensional computer model that sort of relates the text to the image. And every computer science student with even a passing understanding of information theory can debunk this idea because this completely breaks entropy. You can't store 5 billion images in a 4 gigabyte of data and return representation of those images, no matter how imperfect you expect those representations to be, no matter how complex the map is. There simply isn't enough information. Such a system is physically impossible. What diffusion models actually do is they learn the patterns present in diverse images from their captions and store all of these concepts in an n-dimensional vector known as latent vector space. When the user asks for an image, the computer does the opposite of image recognition. It uses a program called a tokenizer that interprets the meaning of the prompt and predicts what an image will look like, starting from noise and removing more and more noise at each step until you get a picture that the computer believes, using the concepts it understands, to be what the user asked for. You can, in fact, interpolate between concepts in the latent space, testing how it comes out with their strength and influence, but the important part is that you're not interpolating between some images that exist somewhere in latent space. You're interpolating between concepts that the computer has learned through training. This is also why it can sometimes return famous paintings and super popular images. Those paintings are so repeated in the training data that they become their own concepts. You know, that's just saying that, you know, if they scrape 1,000 images of the Mona Lisa, and you say Mona Lisa, it's pretty good chance you're going to get the original Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Okay. But in almost all other cases, it's not that specific. This distinction is crucial because it means that these algorithms literally extract concepts from the training data, and for any given image, you can't point to any image from the training data that is where the image derived. It doesn't derive from any image at all. It utilizes underlying concepts of the images, as described by their captions, to create new images analogous to, but not exactly, how the human brain learns to depict things. Their understanding of how these models work is extremely poor. It's beyond poor. Their explanation is complete nonsense. I'd be shocked to learn that they actually believe any of what they wrote in the article. They know that they don't have a case regarding training. So that's pretty much, I think that's a pretty nice explanation of mm-hmm. of how it works and how it doesn't work. Yeah, as far as the lawsuit goes, there's actually two lawsuits now. There's that one from the three artists and claiming that there's copyright infringement just because they used copyrighted data. And then there's Getty Images, which is a stock photography company, has sued. I think they just sued Stability AI to do the a similar kind of thing. Although, you know, we've talked about this before. It's, I think that their position in doing a lawsuit is basically just sort of positioning it.
They know the landscape is changing and they want to be a dominant player in whatever landscape comes after the current one.
Right, right. Yeah.
I want to invoke the notion of patent trolling. There are companies that exist. They just buy portfolios of patents for software with, they don't build anything.
Right, right.
They don't write any code. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is acquiring ammunition to take to court to sue other people.
Right.
Who, you know, have written software that does something similar. And companies will use absurdly overcomplicated language to describe very simple procedures in applying for patents.
Right.
I'm personally of the opinion that software shouldn't be patentable at all.
Right. I agree on that. And I've been through the whole patent process. I have a couple of patents to my name, but they're, you know, on my own work, the patent system is not worthwhile.
Yeah.
You have to be a big company.
So everybody knows that artificial intelligence is going to scramble everything. And so, you know, the people who would have no moral qualms starting a patent troll company, you know, are going to try to set up a toll booth and collect rent from AI-generated artwork.
Right.
Or AI-generated imagery.
Right.
We'll just sidestep the whole distinction between an image and a piece of art.
Right, right. Yeah. But actually, you know, it's interesting because this is very analogous to the situation when photography was developed. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, photography first came out, like, what, in the 1840s or 50s or something, and copyright barely existed back then, especially for images and things like that.
Right.
I think it was mainly text and stuff. But towards the end of the 19th century, you know, people could copyright art that they created. Mm-hmm. And I actually posted a question to the Reddit Ask Historians group, which is an interesting group. People ask questions, and they and you get some pretty talented people answering. And I did get a few answers on it. It was generally fairly pro-artist. Mm-hmm. But what they said, there was a case like in the 1880s or 90s of a photograph of Oscar Wilde or something that somebody tried to copyright, and it got rejected. It went to court, and the court said, well, this really is a creation because the photographer arranged the settings that were the background and who he sat and stuff. And so, and you know, and then in my mind, I'm thinking, isn't this sort of like just what prompts you use?
No. Right.
Okay. And the reason I did this is because a couple weeks ago, somebody posted in the Stable Diffusion group that there was a comic that was where the images were generated by Stable Diffusion, and, you know, AI generated images, and they had applied for a copyright, and they got the copyright, but then shortly later the copyright office, this U.S. copyright office, rejected it. They said only human created images can be copyrighted, and they claimed that. You said that Stable Diffusion was not human created. Well, my feeling is that if it's not human created, then what is a photograph?
Right.
You know, that's even less human created in a sense. You're just pointing your camera at something. And so, you know, now the feeling of this guy, this was a guy, he had some legal background. He thought that the AI guys didn't have as much of a case. But the more I think about it, the more I think, you know, either one of two things are going to happen. If the anti-AI guys win through the legal system or whatever, or, you know, the law. I mean, there's a lot of bad law. Like, the whole DCMA thing is, you know, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act has a lot of bad aspects to it. And it hurts the industry in some ways. It makes people less creative. If that goes through, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see big companies like Disney, for example. What Disney will do is they'll create a training set on all of their...
That they own. Yeah.
Fair and square. And maybe they'll add in a bunch of out of copyright, you know, non-copyrighted images. And they'll be able to creep cartoons up the wazoo with zero effort.
Yeah, very little
effort. Very little effort. Okay, yeah. So that's sort of the worst-case scenario.
And you and I will not have access to
yes.
it.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because that would be proprietary.
Or if there was companies that did provide access, it's going to be big bucks. It's like
yeah.
it's like getting an Adobe CC subscription or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So for those not in the know, Adobe, author of or publisher of such you know perennial classics as Photoshop and
Illustrator,
Adobe Audition, I'll use to yeah. edit this podcast. Yeah, they have a whole suite of mm-hmm. you know software. You used to be able to buy it. It was very expensive, many hundreds of dollars for a copy of Photoshop, right. but you can't buy it anymore. No. Now it's a monthly subscription. And the CC is Creative Cloud.
Yeah, Creative Cloud.
Yeah, so...
Well, actually, they had the CC name well before they did the subscription model, so it's Creative... I forgot exactly what it says. The one reason I have a bunch of old computers at my house is I have both an original version of the Mac version of CC, which I use a lot. I use Adobe Illustrator a lot. I use Photoshop a lot. Mm-hmm. And I also have a PC version that runs on the PC. But unfortunately, especially with the Mac version, I have an old Mac Pro that's running Snow Leopard. That's 10.6.8. That was last updated in 2014. It's so old that you can hardly even browse the web with it anymore because wow. the web browsers are, you know, stopped getting updated and things like that. And so, but it runs all my Adobe stuff just fine. And, you know, it's on my network. And so I go move files over to it and do my work with that. And I don't want to pay $50 a month. And then if I, particularly, you know, as I'm getting near retirement now, you know, I'm not an operation that's running, full bore. I may drop something for half a year and pick it back up again. I don't want to have to keep the subscription going just for that occasional right. use.
So, yeah, I pay the monthly blood money to Adobe, and really what they're doing is they're holding my muscle memory hostage because there's free versions or versions...
Well, inexpensive. There's like...
inexpensive alternatives.
Affinity, I think, is a good one.
Yeah, Affinity Designer. DaVinci Resolve mm-hmm. replaces both Premiere and Audition.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to learn a new interface.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So in order to keep using what's familiar, mm-hmm. I have to cough up money every month and give it to Adobe. Now, if you quit, mm-hmm. they'll say, hey, don't go. Here, have it free for a few months. And then they'll start billing you again. And then if you try to quit again, they'll say, okay, wait, let's talk about this. Sure, $55 is a lot. What about $35? How about 30?
Yeah, but they're not going to do that forever. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
that's what I pay. I pay 35 a month. That's good. That's down good. From 55. So
yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
but no, it's an extractive model. It's
rent collection.
Basically. Yes, rent collection, and you know, I don't know. It's a whole big mess. It's actually I saw a very good YouTube just recently about it was titled something like "What's Gone Wrong with Video Games," and this was a guy who was a heavy duty video gamer. In it for years, mm-hmm. and he shows you how the early games you bought the game, it was complete, you know, yeah. standalone, you own it forever, and then how they started adding these like little things like loot boxes and
yeah. extra
in-game purchases yeah. and special names and you know, all this stuff. He says now they're so loaded up with this stuff, and you know, they're making billions of dollars off of this.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, Hollywood is like a footnote next to the video game industry in terms of profits.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's
huge.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is just the whole industry is messed up. Now, the other thing, and I think what happened with the Stable Diffusion is, I think those guys realized that the Disneyfication of this whole technology could happen, and that's kind of a worst case scenario by putting it out for free with free models, mm-hmm. standalone.
Yeah.
What they've done now is they put their foot in the door, and you're not going to close that door because...
Right. Because even if the law runs against them at every single court decision, Stable Diffusion is on millions of machines around the world.
Right.
People have used it to generate billions of images.
Yeah.
Those images themselves can be used to train, you know, to create data sets for new training, you know, training new models.
Right.
So, yeah, they've just let it go. They've released right. it into the wild.
Well, I think that's intentional, though, yeah. to keep the door open. Because the other thing is, the more people that use it, the more they're going to sell in the long run.
Right.
If it's kept as this sort of closed door dark secret thing that's really expensive, it's just going to have very small usage.
So this can all be extracted from what we've said so far, but I just want to underline it. The artists who are objecting to AI imagery have mm-hmm. selected a vulnerable target, which is stability AI
right.
and stable diffusion. And they are playing the part of useful idiots. Basically, they're foot soldiers in Disney's army.
Right.
Because,
right.
you know, as we've pointed out, the pushback against AI-generated imagery being focused on the open source projects right. is giving free rein to the corporations.
Right.
And, you know, the corporations, like, there's an arms race between mm-hmm. Google, mm-hmm. Microsoft, mm-hmm. Apple,
right.
Amazon, trying to create, you know, the powerful leading edge mm-hmm. AI products. Mm-hmm. And whoever gets a first mover advantage there, I mean, you know, companies like Google didn't exist
yeah.
25 years ago. And right. now they're some of the most powerful, richest companies in the world.
Right.
We're in a time when things are going to change enough that a small player can, you know, leap up to mm-hmm. a big position like that. And mm-hmm. the current holders of those big positions don't want that to happen.
Yes.
You know, so they're looking to dominate the space. And by all of these, you know, artists and other people who have sympathized with their arguments, you know, in focusing on the open source projects, I just can't stress how much they are assisting without realizing it. And they wouldn't want to if they knew what they were doing.
Right.
They're lending enormous support to big companies.
Yeah. This isn't happening just in the intellectual property area. There's a lot of things like, there's rumors that for the technical-minded people, in 2006, there was this European Union rule called ROHS, Reduction of Hazardous Substances. And one of the things is they wanted to get lead out of consumer items, and it turns out that tin lead solder is what all the electronics have been put together with for, you know, over 100 years. Actually, since the Romans, they invented solder. yeah. And they said, oh, we've got to get lead out of the solder. Well, the trouble is that there really were not very many good alternatives for unleaded solder. And the early ones really sucked a lot. You know, the lead is in there for a good reason. It makes it flow nicely and mm-hmm. it's very stable and doesn't develop hairline filaments that short things out and stuff like that. Well, the European Union just basically forced it through. And so because if you want to sell in the European Union, almost everybody is lead-free now. Now, they've improved the lead-free stuff. But I still do not use lead-free solder at my own, at my home, you know. And by the way, the lead in a lead in solder is not going to come out and kill you. You have to basically ingest oxidized versions of it. I mean, just handling metallic lead is not the worst thing. So, but the conspiracy theory aspect was that it was Philips, based in the Netherlands, that pushed this hard because they knew that the big companies like them could afford to buy the special equipment to do lead-free soldering, you know, mm-hmm. the wave solder machines or the surface mount soldering, things like that. And so, and yet the small companies would not be able to afford it and push out the small companies. So that's another example of where the big companies are sort of pushing their weight around.
Yeah. Big companies like excessive regulation.
Yeah.
Because they can afford to comply with it and
right.
small upstart competitors cannot.
Right, and if they're lucky, they can even influence.
Oh, right. That's the next step.
Right, to make it harder for the small companies.
So let's just change the subject slightly to Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah.
Who, you know, was the, principal architect of Alameda Research mm-hmm. and the FTX exchange. And he had been basically taking customer money
mm-hmm.
and giving it to politicians.
Oh yeah.
So that he could curry influence and get his industry to be placed under the regulatory control of a pathetic little.
It's like the commodities exchange.
Yeah,
it's the commodities one, not the Securities Exchange Commission,
right?
Or FTC, the Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So that, you know, his growing industry would be regulated by this underfunded, understaffed,
right.
you know, federal agency, which was simply not up to the task.
Yeah.
So regulatory capture is, you know, it is business as usual, and we only take notice of it really when something spectacular happens, like
right.
the absolute meltdown of FTX.
Right, right.
associated, you know, that creates chain reactions of people having to liquidate portfolios in order to cover, you know, short positions.
Oh, yeah, it's you know, mutilating the whole double crypto industry. Mm-hmm. So,
but the crypto industry is plugged into a lot of other, you know, parts of the economy that you might not think about.
Right. Right.
So yeah, the regulatory capture is not at all specific to AI.
Right.
But it will be happening here as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me get back to the stability.
Yeah, go ahead.
The stable diffusion thing. One thing that they did in the training set, mm-hmm. is whenever they scanned artwork that with a known artist, they would include the name of the artist.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people do a lot with stable diffusion is say, you know, draw me a nighttime street scene in the style of Greg Rutowski.
Yeah.
You know, he's a Polish artist that has a certain very distinctive style.
Yeah.
And I played around with it on my own stable diffusion setup, and it's interesting to see. I'm not an artist. I'm not an art historian, so I don't know all the different artists. But I plugged in a bunch of names. I said, okay, Jackson Pollock, Van Gogh, Hieronymus Bosch. Mm-hmm. But it makes some very cool images from Hieronymus Bosch, by the way. It all does it in the style of those artists. And now, of course, on stuff like Hieronymus Bosch, I did some Van Eyck, who was also an early artist. Put that into exactly the style of him. On the other hand, I have some art done by an artist in the town I grew up in Connecticut, who never became that well known, but he's very interesting abstract art. And I have some paintings of his, and I put his name in, zero recognition. Just came up with sort of random stuff, yeah. You know. Whereas if it's name that I recognize, it definitely does the style. I think if Stable Diffusion had somehow disabled that thing of in the style of, mm-hmm. they would have reduced the flack that they got a lot, because that's what the people are saying. They're saying, "Well, put in Greg Rutowski, and it's just like Greg Rutowski." Well, the other thing that they don't seem to understand is that you can't copyright
a style. Right.
They've tried doing that. I think they got closest to that in the music domain, where like some rapper said, "Oh, he's sampled," or something like that. And there's some limits there in the music world, but you know, everybody copies styles. You know, you would have no creativity if there were no styles to copy, essentially.
Yeah. And back to the scenario where open source approaches to AI image generation have been curtailed through legal action, mm-hmm. But companies like Disney, which own enormous libraries, mm-hmm. of material that they can feed into their algorithms to mm-hmm. train them up, mm-hmm. Then, kids, like I learned to draw, I took art classes and things, but I also copied the stuff that I liked, copied the comics that I was reading, things like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of artists are looking to beef up copyright law and intellectual property protections so that style would be protected. Yeah. In which case, if I were to just try to draw something in the style, the house style of Disney, mm-hmm. That's legal today. I mean, that's just how people learn. But, if you beef up copyright laws enough, you could get to the point where kids at school, drawing Disney princess or whatever, could get sued. And as we've seen, in the early days of the music online industry, companies are happy to go after, 14-year-olds and their grandmother. They did that for years.
Right. And basically they had to sort of give up because it just was...
It was a public relations disaster.
Public relations disaster. And also, it's like whack-a-mole. I mean, they're never going to have a law that's just going to stop it once and for all. There's always ways to get around.
Now, AI and the law is kind of scary, because imagine, AI, like a painting that would take an artist weeks to do, the mm-hmm. AI can do in seconds. Mm-hmm. Imagine what AI set to just filing frivolous lawsuits could do.
Oh, yeah. Well, that veers into the ChatGPT, which I don't think we have time to get into that, and I'm not as knowledgeable in that. But that, yes, it's very scary.
Yeah,
it's pretty. What's interesting is this is a very interesting inflection point in the whole creative scene, And because it's not just art, it's music, it's text, it's, you know, anything where you can kind of go back and analyze what was done. Now, the thing, the one thing that sort of nags me in the back of my mind is that in a sense, you could say that all AI image generation is derivative. Mm-hmm. It's not creating something from whole cloth. Although, on the other hand, you saw from looking at some of my images, there's some pretty damn creative stuff that it does. I mean, I'm looking at stuff, and in fact, I've seen this on the forums where artists will say, damn, you know, I may just use this Stable Diffusion to just get some ideas, because it will do things that didn't even cross your mind. And then you can take that and run with it or whatever.
Somebody posted a comment to one of my videos, and they just used the phrase, drawing challenged creative types.
Right.
And somebody else responded to that comment and just, you know, pulled out that phrase and said, you people are ridiculous. As if to say, there are no creative people in the world except people who draw.
Give me a break.
Yeah. So, you know, Akira Kurosawa, a Japanese filmmaker, yeah, he's a painter. He paints.
I've seen his movie. He's great. But I didn't know he was a painter.
Yeah, he's a painter. But there was a period where, you know, he had been making samurai films, and then the studio didn't have any money, couldn't fund him.
Right.
And he just went to painting. He's painting, yeah, for years. And then Ridley Scott, you know, mm-hmm, is an accomplished illustrator. Mm-hmm. When he came on to Alien, he got the budget doubled by doing some very elaborate storyboards that got a lot of people in Hollywood excited, mm-hmm, you know, about the project. Mm-hmm. But a lot of film directors, you know, who are composing visual images, they, mm-hmm, don't draw.
Yeah, right.
You know, they write. They, mm-hmm, write a description,
right,
of the scene,
mm-hmm,
as they write their screenplay.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm, exterior shot, a hotel. You know, that's like a prompt.
Right. It's very close to a prompt.
Yeah.
Not exactly.
Except instead of turning it over to your film production crew, you turn it over to an algorithm.
Right.
But the idea that there's no creativity involved with AI-generated art also overlooks the fact that so much of what the algorithms generate is absolute garbage,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, the prompt engineer or, mm-hmm, the AI artist, really a lot of their creativity comes in creating lots and lots and lots of these images, noticing which prompts create things which are good, which, mm-hmm, prompts don't, mm-hmm, and then basically just picking out the good stuff from all of the garbage that gets generated.
Yeah, tell me that is not a human creation.
Exactly. You know, if you have a CCTV camera,
mm-hmm,
trained on a street corner, and it runs automatically, it's creating,
mm-hmm,
you know, millions of images, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's not creative. It's mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
But if I find one frame in some, mm-hmm, 12-hour segment of, you know, mm-hmm, of CCTV footage, which is, it's got beautiful composition, it tells a story. The fact that I found it, recognized it, pulled it out.
That's your work.
Yeah. I did that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
This image, which you are looking at and getting information from, wouldn't be in front of you, mm-hmm, if I hadn't noticed it,
right,
and pulled it out of context and pushed it in a new context.
Right.
That's creative.
Right. Well, I've been following some of the various Stable Diffusion groups, and you know, there's a, you know, aside from the complaints, well, actually, most of the Stable Diffusion groups are pro AI. So,
yeah,
you know,
most artists, I think, are pro AI.
Right, but there's also a lot of the postings are of techniques and say, hey, I'm having a problem with eyes. Can people help me? And then somebody says, well, hey, I tried this in the prompt and this worked. Blah blah blah. Well, this is the beginning of a huge volume of acquired knowledge of how to make it work right.
Yep.
And that is human creativity at its finest right there.
Now, some people who are, they seem to be pushing back against the anti-AI hysteria.
Yeah.
And they say, look, these images have problems. If you're an illustrator, you can still get work retouching these things.
Right.
And I think that's not very realistic. The limitations that require retouching right now will be short-lived.
Right.
This stuff's going to be very good.
That's right. It's getting good really fast.
Yeah.
Well, and also, you know, we haven't mentioned there's other aspects of Stable Diffusion, which is image to image, mm-hmm, and then infilling and outfilling.
Please describe those.
Okay. Image to image, it's what it is in addition to it, you have a text prompt, but you also have a starting image And what basically what the prompt does is it tries to modify the image to include the aspects of the prompt.
Yep.
And that's a way of, you know, of having more control over what you're doing, because, you know, if just text to image, you can get some pretty random things sometimes. But this is, so this is a way of modifying an image. Now, in painting, I'm not that knowledgeable on this, so I may be making mistakes here, but the in painting is where, let's say that you have a nice scene, everything looks good, but you want to put a mountain in the background right there. And what you can do is you can sort of like actually create a fairly crude geometric thing showing this is what I want and make this a mountain, and it'll do its magic to put it into the nice image and have it rendered very nicely. Mm-hmm. And an outpainting is where you take something out, where you, like, there's something in the image and you want to remove it. You can just circle it and say, take this out. But it fills in all the rest, so it's a coherent whole.
I think that's also in painting. I think outpainting is where you've got an image and then you expand the canvas.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I told you, I don't let that go to this. Yeah, you're right. Oh, and sort of related to that is the what the word they use. You know, everything starts with 512 by 512. Mm-hmm. That's because that's what they trained the images on. Although some of the later, newer versions have 768 in the dimension. And the problem is if you can specify a bigger pixel image, but the problem is its algorithms don't work that well. You know, the quality of the image is not as good. But you can take a small image, and let's say you want to make it double its size. There are programs that will use the AI aspect to preserve the quality of the image. So it's not just like blurring it. It actually makes things still have straight edges. And
it's adding pixels.
It's adding pixels, but smart pixels. Not just, you know, anyone's used Photoshop and say, okay, you know, double the size of the image. Well, it's just a blurred image, essentially. You know, this is way better than that. And I've seen some pretty good, there's different algorithms around it. That's also quickly moving to get better and better.
What else did you have in your notes that we haven't touched on?
Well, one of the things, I thought I'd just talk about what it would take to use Stable Diffusion.
Okay.
And I mentioned before my use of the Mac Studio. If you have a PC, you need a pretty powerful video card. It doesn't have to be the max, but the main thing is you need a lot of video memory. And the numbers I've seen are like 8 gig or higher. So that's putting you up into like at least a couple $100 video card. And you have to have and those, of course, have to be in a machine that you can plug it into. It's not often.
Fortunately, we are in a crypto winter.
Yes.
When crypto is going mad, you can't buy video cards
because right.
Crypto miners buy them all.
Right, but now that crypto is faltering, the market's opening up again.
Yeah.
And so there's that. But the other thing that's interesting, just recently, in fact, this is just this last week, Apple has announced a new set of products, including two different versions of their Mac Mini with M2 processors. And I went to their website, and the lowest end one is a M2 Mac Mini with 8 gig of RAM and 256 gig SSD, $600.
That'll run Stable Diffusion.
Well, we're not as fast as mine, but
right.
Now they have another one where, let's say you bump it up to 16 gig of RAM and 512 gig of storage, that's about $1,000. Now, they also have a Mac Mini M2 Pro, 32 gig RAM, 512 gig, which, by the way, is the same specs as my Mac Studio, $1,700. Now, I paid a little over $2,000 for my Mac Studio for that same spec. So, you know, it's not, you know, Apple is not by no means the cheapest.
No.
But it's not that crazy, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely doable, and I'll tell you, I have fun making these images. I mean, it's so interesting what you come up with.
You know, I mentioned that the Wombo Dream, which was what I was using about a year ago, created images which to me are now quaint. But I remember at the time, I was compulsive about it. I just kept, you know, entering prompt after prompt after prompt.
Yeah. No, it's
I've got a huge library of these very, you know, what are now very crude looking images.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and of course, you can use it in all different ways. I mean, the one thing that I find kind of interesting, although I don't necessarily agree with it, is when you go to some of these forums and people are showing off what they're done, it seems like 80% of the stuff are is like trying to make anime or, you know, these very stereotyped, you know, like, you know, women out of the video games, the big boobed women, things like that. And all I can think of, there's some guys that are, they need a sexual release somehow other than this, you know.
Well, we certainly don't have time to delve into this in much detail, but I'm struck. Google has decided that I need to see commercials for the replica AI, you know, AI girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Basically, you've got a customizable AI, which will, you know, talk mm-hmm. to you and keep you company and learn what you like and what mm-hmm. you don't like. Mm-hmm. And over time become your, did you see the movie Her?
With Joaquin no, Phoenix? But I've heard yeah. about it.
It's worth seeing. It's a good film.
I'll check it out.
But yeah, it's not far off.
Yeah. Well, the other thing though, and you know, we're talking about, you know, commercialization of AI. And you know what's going to be a huge one? Porn.
Oh, yeah.
Because
custom generated bespoke porn.
Bespoke porn. Because now the one thing that's with this Stable Diffusion and the models that they're using is they did put traps in there to knock out what they call inappropriate images.
Yeah, there are alternatives online that you can go to and you can create what's called not safe for work, NSFW imagery.
Right. I actually did try some porn stuff on my own. I deleted those files. It doesn't work very well. It really doesn't. I mean, it might be because I'm bumping up against, you know, limits that they put
in. Which is weird because if you design a web crawler to go and scrape all the porn sites, there's a massive data set.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you could see companies, you know, charging on a scale. Mm-hmm. Oh, you just want vanilla porn? Oh, yeah, you can get that pretty cheap. Oh, you want the kink? You want the, you know, whatever that's going to cost you.
Yeah. So. Oh, and you know those, you know, the, like, there's a lot of monopoly power in the online porn industry. Mm-hmm. You know they're just pushing money into AI research.
Oh, yeah. It's just right up their alley.
Gosh, if we could get rid of these stupid human performers.
Right, and their you know, their moral rights, or whatever they call it in Europe, you know, they're you know, you get this, you can make a really good looking woman or guy and, you know, have them do all sorts of things.
Yes. And we're going to be exploring the far reaches of the possible space of sexual fetish in the coming years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's already furry porn and tentacle porn and, mm-hmm. you know, that was just all hand-drawn stuff and people in costumes. Well,
this makes it so much easier.
Yeah. And, you know, we're long into the territory of where, you know, and I'll talk about the heterosexual side of things where, you know, men who are used to getting sexually aroused looking at women who star in porn, you know, the women who star in porn are not your average person on the street. No. They have a very specific body type that isn't widely available to most people.
Which results in a lot of unsatisfied men, basically.
Or unaroused men. I mean, men who are aroused in the abstract when they're by themselves, but you get them with a real woman and they're like, ooh, gross.
Yeah, I know. That's a very 19th century thing, but it's coming back.
Yeah, well, you know, AI... inexpertly navigated will just exacerbate that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a brave new world.
Yeah.
No, it's like I say though, I'm having fun playing with it. It's just, you know, and the funny thing is that at least in its current state of design, it has a lot of faults. And the funny thing is the faults are very recognizable. So once you've played around Stable Diffusion, someone could show you a random picture and you could go, oh yeah, look at those hands. Look at the text, but it totally mangles text. And it also tends to mangle hands, feet on four-legged animals. I've seen a lot. I did a series on cats, and I often would get five legs on the cat. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we saw the horse with three legs and things like that. You know, this is really the beginning of a big change that's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's as I tell my friends who are worried about, you know, the world's falling apart and, you know, what's going to happen in the future. And I said, well, a good way to look at it is just pretend that you've gone to a demolition derby and you can watch all this stuff happen. Just dodge the debris when it comes your way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Don't sit in the front row.
Right. Have you been to demolition derbies?
I've never seen one.
I've been to them twice. They actually have one every year up in Arrington.
Wow.
And it's crazy. It's hard to describe, but you can really get off on it because just watching people destroy things, there's some human emotion that gets triggered there.
You know, I don't play a lot of video games.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that, it's only true in the sense that I don't play a wide variety of video games.
Right.
I play Angry Birds almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the joy of that is just watching stuff fall down.
Right.
Just breaking stuff.
Right. Yeah. I think it was Alan Watts. I remember, you know Alan Watts was, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he had a series where he said that, you know, he had this fantasy of buying a stadium right next to a junkyard and then advertising saying, this weekend, we're going to drop a grand piano from a height of 200 feet. Come and watch it. And people will pay good money to see that. You know, this is just the psyche of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty crazy. But anyway, so we're coming into a brand new world in many areas, not just creativity and AI.
So I will put a cherry on top of that and say that I follow somebody on Twitter, and I can't bring her name to mind from memory, but she's an AI researcher, mm-hmm. and she reads, you know, academic papers on AI, which I don't.
Mm-hmm.
She can see trends evolving that I'm not seeing, mm-hmm. and also seeing stagnation where other people are seeing dynamism.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks that, you know, this current AI craze, which is not just, you know, of interest to artists and things, but it's in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
It's an enormous suck for capital,
for
venture capital right now. And she says that, look, these things are going to get just incorporated into Photoshop and mm-hmm. Affinity Designer and, you know, Corel Draw or whatever. It's just going to be a new set of tools in these big software packages, and you're going to take it for granted almost immediately. And in a year or two, the idea that we would be using the term AI to describe these functions will just be kind of cringy.
Right.
Because there's a constantly moving goalpost in terms of creating AI.
Right.
Whatever computers have managed to do
mm-hmm.
isn't intelligence.
Right.
Intelligence is always defined as what only humans can do, and computers haven't figured out how to do yet.
Well, they were calling, you know, what was it, back in the 50s, they had that ELIZA program,
mm-hmm.
which was basically a text-based thing that you run on the computer.
It's very simple.
And it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's sort of like a psychiatrist that he just repeats back what you said. And people are calling that AI.
Right.
You know. And so I should have mentioned this earlier, but this what you just said ties into this, is I see postings by experienced artists on these Stable Diffusion sites who are saying, well, I'm going to have to learn this, but this is going to be another tool in my toolbox.
Yeah.
You know? And it'll help me. I'll get from point A to point B a lot faster, and then I'll take it to point B, I'll finesse it and make it exactly what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I can't find it on the phone because I'm using the phone as a recorder.
Right.
But somebody posted something on Twitter, something to the effect of a lot of people are afraid AI will take their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
AI won't take your job. Somebody who uses AI more effectively than you do will take your job.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you learn how to use it, you got a job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to wrap it up here.
Yeah.
So that's been good. I really enjoyed talking to you, by the way.
Likewise.
Well, we should definitely, you know, stay in touch.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably be out this way again next year.
Yeah.
Or later this year, actually.
Yeah. Whenever. Yeah. I'm not planning to move. So, And if we want to talk more, we can do a voice.
There's, this internet thing I've been hearing about.
Yeah.
You can make calls on it, apparently.
Yeah. I have. When I was working at World Nevada Counseling, our board meetings, we went to Zoom, and I have a nice Zoom setup, but, you know. You don't have to see my face.
All right. Well, okay. John Atwood, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. And forward to how this comes out.
All right. That was my conversation with John Atwood. And in closing here, I want to float an idea by you. I want to get the main Sea Realm podcast going again on a regular production schedule. But that hyphen in Sea Realm has always been a problem. And I'm thinking of just rebranding the show as something else, something simpler. I'll use the same RSS feed. All the people who are currently subscribed will still be subscribed, but I'll be starting over with episode number one. My working title right now is The KMO Show. It's got an internal rhyme, simple, descriptive. What do you think? Send me email, KMO at thekmoshow.com. No, KMO at c-realm.com. Or, you know, if you are in regular touch with me via YouTube or Patreon or Twitter, it's possible. I don't really have many meaningful conversations or interactions that take place on Twitter. But if you are in regular contact with me and you have an opinion on that idea, let me know. If you are not in regular contact with me and you have an opinion on that idea, let me know, if you would. All right. I'll wrap it up, but thank you very much for staying subscribed during this winter of very few podcasts. I do apologize. Again, my ambition and my resolution is to get back to creating a lot more podcast content than I have been. And I think part of that is going to have to be using what people call AI or, you know, algorithmic tools to streamline the production process, because I've discovered that shooting and editing videos on my phone is a heck of a lot more efficient in terms of creating content than the traditional podcasting methodology that I worked out about a decade and a half ago, to the point where I spent 3 days editing that 1 hour conversation that you just heard. It shouldn't have taken more than a couple hours, but I'm very distractible, so I could use some help focusing. All right, that's probably more information than you needed just now. I will talk to you again quite soon. That is a promise. Thank you for staying subscribed, and stay well.